It is a privilege to be here today, passing on to you not only the teachings of my great teacher, Shunryu Suzuki Roshi, but by passing on the meaning of his teachings, giving meaning to the practice of all of the great Buddhist ancestors, all the way back to Shakyamuni Buddha, who, by the way, was the seventh Buddha in line. There were six Buddhas before Shakyamuni. I always thought that he was eighth, but I just read he was seventh. Anyway, so we've learned about how Okamura Roshi, until he was in his 30s, used Dogen as his model. But after that, when his body was physically weakened from doing all that work in Pioneer Valley, Zendo, something like that, here, he went back to Japan and he knew that his practice was going to be Takuhatsu. And that's Ryokan's main practice after he left the organized religion. His main practice was Takuhatsu. So Okamura Roshi thought, I'm going to learn more about Ryokan now and how he reorganized his life really around Takuhatsu and around who he would become as really a lay practitioner now, not a monastic. We've talked about Ryokan last time and his life and so forth. And now I want to make the connection between Dogen and Ryokan much clearer. And Okamura Roshi, I love that he does this. He takes a number of Ryokan's longer poems and he breaks them into sections. And then he gives commentary on each of the sections. And the commentary is all about the connection between Ryokan and Dogen, really. So I want to present one of them to you today. I may have read this poem or at least part of it to you before, but as Okamura Roshi says, it gives you a chance to taste it twice. By way of introduction, Okamura Roshi says, I would like to write about my understanding of poetry by Ryokan, in which he expressed his understanding and feelings about Soto Zen Buddhism, as well as his relationship with Dogen. So this poem, it's called The Reading the Record of Eihei. Eihei is Eihei Dogen. And reading the record, it seems like Zen masters left a record, which I guess can be of different things that they feel are important. And Dogen's extended record is about his Dharma talks when he was at Eihei-ji, which was toward the end of his life, the previous 10 years before the end of his life. Anyway, this record of Eihei-ji is this that Ryokan is reading now, is the extended record of Dogen. And it's not only his Dharma talks at Eihei-ji, it has also his waka, his Japanese poetry. So I'm going to read you right now the whole poem. It's called Reading the Record of Eihei. In the vacant darkness of a spring midnight, sleet was falling on the bamboo in the garden. I wanted to ease my loneliness, but found nothing helpful. Reaching back, I searched for the record of Eihei. Beneath the clear window, on top of the desk, I burned incense, lit the oil lamp, opened and silently read the book. Dropping off body and mind is simply genuine reality. Dogen plays the dragon's jewel in 10,000 ways. His exceptional ability caught the tiger's cub. His mature and imposing style was like that of the ancestors in India. I remember that a long time ago, while staying at Ansuji Monastery, my late teacher upheld the true Dharma eye. At that time, I experienced the pivotal point for transforming myself. Therefore, I asked him to let me read the texts, and I intimately practiced following Dogen's teachings. Further, I realized that I had been wastefully using my strength. After that, I left my teacher and traveled far and wide to practice with other teachers. What was my affinity with Ehe? Wherever I went, I respectfully practiced the teachings of the true Dharma eye. More years than I can remember have passed away. I forget the function, return to my home country, and have been living the idle, lazy life. Now I hold this record and am able to visit it. Dogen's teaching is beyond compare with any other, yet no one investigates whether it is jewel or stone. His writings have been covered with dust for 500 years because people do not have an eye for penetrating the Dharma. Everyone has been the same. Who could uphold Dogen's teaching for others? I yearn for Dogen's ancient way. Thinking of the present day people, I feel pain deep in my heart. Throughout the night, by the light of the lamp, my tears have not ceased, completely soaking the record of the ancient Buddha, Ehe. Next day, an old man from the neighborhood visits my grass hut and asks me why the book is wet. Although I tried to say something, struggling in my mind, I cannot explain to him. Despite my efforts, I cannot explain. I lower my head and pause, then say only one thing. Last night, the rain came in and drenched my book container. I believe you've heard this poem before, which again gives you a chance to taste it twice. Okamura Roshi comments, Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, when deeply practicing Prajnaparamita, that is Zazen, clearly saw that all five aggregates are empty and thus relieved all suffering. The five aggregates, by the way, are form, feeling, perception, mental formations, like dreams and concepts, and consciousness, those five things. So the first is our body, and the next four are all mental. And the great ones, like Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of compassion, the great ones have observed that this is entirely what we are made of. And since none of it is permanent, we ourselves are empty of our inherent individual self that we think we have. So when we see things from just sitting, like Zazen, we begin to see genuine reality. Dogen calls this dropping off body and mind. That's what genuine reality, when Dogen uses the word dropping off body and mind, that's what he means, genuine reality. It's his description of what happens to us in Zazen. And that's why he says that practice and realization are the same. I'm increasingly understanding this. Ryokan says that by seeing things inside and outside and being free from self-clinging, Dogen could see, play with, and express, he says, the dragon's pearl, but that just means genuine reality. So express genuine reality in limitless ways and catch the tiger's cub, which means the selfless self. So these are just Zen pillow words, really, just expressions that are used again and again. Ryokan thought that Dogen's teaching, based on dropping off body and mind, came directly from Shakyamuni Buddha. So now Okamura Roshi divides the poem into three sections, explicating each section separately. I won't reread the beginning part, but just starting with the middle of what he calls a section. I'm just going to reread the part that he's going to comment on. I remember that a long time ago, while staying at Ensuji Monastery, that's where Ryokan was an actual monk and practiced, and that's where he asked for special permission. He had this experience of kind of realization. And at that point, he asked for special permission to see the actual texts of Dogen, of Dogen's writing, which were on these like parchment papers that obviously all the students couldn't see that. So he asked for special permission to see that. So let's see, I remember that long ago while staying at Ensuji Monastery, my lay teacher upheld the true Dharma eye. That is, he understood Dogen. At that time, I experienced the pivotal point for transforming myself. He had an awakening experience. Therefore, I asked him, my teacher, to let me read the text in the other room that were kept in the cupboard so they wouldn't get hurt by water or something. And I intimately practiced following Dogen's teaching. Further, I realized that I had been wastefully using my strength. After that, I left my teacher and traveled far and wide to practice with other teachers. What was my affinity with Eihei? Wherever I went, I respectfully practiced the teachings of the Dharma Eye. More years than I can remember have passed away. I forgot the function, returned to my home country, and have been living the idle, lazy life. So that section now, Okamura Roshi is going to comment on. In this section, Ryokan remembers his experience of studying and practicing Dogen's teaching of the true Dharma Eye treasure while he practiced at Ensuji Monastery. By the way, the Shobo Genzo is the treasury of the true Dharma Eye. So that's Dogen's masterpiece. And so whenever he uses this expression, the true Dharma Eye, he's referring to the true Dharma Eye of Dogen and the collection in the Shobo Genzo that he's made of his talks and writings about Dogen. So so back to Okamura Roshi, he says, his teacher Dainen Kokusen gave lectures on Dogen's writings, including Shobo Genzo. Ryokan was inspired and asked his teacher to allow him to read the text by himself. At this time, the Shobo Genzo was not yet published in a woodblock version, which is why Ryokan had to ask for special permission from the abbot to read the rare and precious hand-copied manuscript. So, the upshot is that Ryokan had to go to a lot of trouble. And it took courage to ask for special permission to go into the kind of archive where this hand-copied manuscript was kept and that he would now be allowed to read. By studying Shobo Genzo, Ryokan says that he experienced the pivotal point for transforming himself. Until then, Okamura Roshi points out, he probably thought Ryokan, me, studied and practiced, not me, but Ryokan thought that I studied and practiced the Dharma using his own power and effort to see the true reality of all beings. But now he found that all beings came to him and allowed him to practice. This is one of the most important points Dogen makes in the Genjo Koan. It's a really important point. And it basically means that everything comes to us as a gift, as we've talked about, but we forget anyway, even though we know, and we try and control what happens to us using our effort. But Dogen's understanding that if you think of it as everything that comes to us as a gift, arouses a lot of gratitude, and it's worth experimenting with. If you start seeing things this way, it's softer and more in tune with reality, actually. So the way Dogen puts it, to see the true reality of all beings, but he found now that all beings came to him and allowed him to practice. All beings came to him and allowed him to practice. So really, we shouldn't be trying to control anything, but just be increasingly aware that all beings, that means dharmas, that means everything, truths, all truths come to him and allow him to practice. So Ryokan practiced at Ensuji, this monastery, for 12 years, from 1779 to 1791, from the time he was 22 until he was 33. So, but shortly before Kokusen's death in 1791, his teacher gave a poem and a staff to Ryokan. So before he died, he gave Ryokan a poem and a staff. And commonly, this is considered to mean that Dokan received Inka, which is the seal certifying completion of practice or Dharma transmission. Seemingly, he was therefore qualified to be the abbot of a Soto temple. And yet, when Ryokan passed away, he was simply called Ryokan Shuso, which means head monk. And that was on his mortuary tablet. In today's Soto school system, after completing Shuso practice, we receive Dharma transmission sometime later, and only after copying these documents and visiting a Heiji or another monastery to do a ceremony called Suize, I think you pronounce it, but you're abbot for the day. You become abbot for the day in these two main Soto Zen monasteries as a part of your the process of getting Dharma transmission. So Okamura Roshi says, I think it was the same in Ryokan's time, but no one, including Ryokan himself, ever mentioned that he received Dharma transmission or copied the three documents or visited a Heiji for this ceremony, Suize. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Z-U-I-S-E. That's being abbot for the day. Two different monasteries. Probably Kokusen passed away before giving transmission to Ryokan. And Ryokan did not want to receive transmission from another teacher. Or possibly he had already decided not to be a Soto Zen temple priest and part of the government-controlled Buddhist system. That's why all these serious practitioners were leaving monasteries, because the monasteries were controlled by the government and they were just deteriorating in terms of essential authentic Buddhist practice. So then Ryokan traveled widely until 1796 when he was 39. And no one knows much about what he did during that time. But in this poem, he says that wherever he went, he met and respectfully practiced Shobogen, meaning the true Dharma eye, meaning Dogen's practice. I think Ryokan means that I, meaning Okamura Roshi, thinks Ryokan means that wherever he went, he practiced with the essential spirit of Dogen, studying the self and dropping off body and mind. Those two practices, studying the self and dropping off body and mind, are Dogen's essential practices. So in the poem, Ryokan remembers that in his youth, he studied and practiced following Shogo Genzo and other teachings of Dogen. However, after returning to Echigo, which was his hometown, his childhood hometown, when he was 39 years old, he gave it up. And as he expressed it, "I have been living the idle, lazy life." Roshi says, "Lazy life is a translation of," this is the Japanese word, sorai. So means negligent or careless, and rai means lazy, dull, or idle. And in the Zen literature, this laziness has a special meaning. One of the Dharma descendants of Jinshu, who was the founder of the Chinese, the Northern school of Chinese Zen, descendant of Jinshu, whose real name was Miyosan, but he was called by the nickname Laizan, L-A-I-Z-A-N. That means lazy Zan. In a long poem, he says, this is lazy Zan says, "When I am hungry, I eat rice. When I am tired, I sleep. Foolish people laugh at me, but wise people know what I mean." So later, Rinzai of Rinzai Zen, Rinzai himself, quoted this statement. And since then, and since Rinzai quoted the statement, laziness was used to point to a certain style of practice, Zen practice, outside formal monastic practice. And another example of the same kind of Zen person is Hanshan, like Ryokan, a very famous poet. This laziness is not completely negative, and Ryokan's lifestyle after returning to Echigo is a typical example of Zen laziness. And Ryokan loved Hanshan's poems. So one of Ryokan's famous poems is this little short poem I'm now going to read. "For my entire life, I have been too lazy to rise in the world. I live freely, leaving everything to heaven's truth. In my bag, 3 measures of rice. By the fireside, a bundle of firewood. Who inquires after the trace of delusion and realization? Why do I care for the dusts of fame and profit? In the night rain inside my grass hut, I stretch my legs leisurely." So Ryokan doesn't care for social climbing, but leaves everything to heaven's truth. And heaven's truth really means reality as it is, reality as it is, before being processed by human thinking. Reality as it is, before being processed by human thinking. So Ryokan's poem, the one I just read, might have been inspired by a poem by Hanshan. So listen to this. This is Hanshan. "All my life, too lazy to work, favoring the light to the heavy. Others take up a career. I hold on to a sutra, a scroll with nothing inside." Right? Nothing. We're becoming nothing. "I open it wherever I go. For every illness, it has a cure and heals with whatever works. Once your mind contains no plan, wherever you are, it is alert. So when Ryokan says, I'm too lazy to rise in this world included Buddhist temples as a part of the worldly social system. At some time of his life, as he wandered here and there, Okumura Roshi thinks that Ryokan found that he could not live like Dokken because internally, his impractical personality could not work with others within an organization like a monastery. And externally, because the situation of the Soto school and its temples, ruled by the government, basically, he had to create his own lifestyle and practice as a bodhisattva inspired by Dogen's teachings, but without imitating Dogen's style as it was practiced as Soto Zen monasteries of the time. But Roshi says there may be a difference between Chinese lazy Zen monks and Ryokan. For Ryokan could not be completely lazy. This is Okumura, what he's saying. He is not 100% comfortable being a lazy Zen monk. Sometimes he feels shame or even guilt for leaving his family responsibilities and for having discontinued the diligent monastic practice that Dogen carried out. His mind is ambivalent, even though he knows he cannot change his way of life. And Okumura thinks this is an attractive aspect of Ryokan. Probably the Chinese Zen monks had the same kind of internal entanglements, but Zen literature, as it comes down to us, is really hagiography created by later people about legendary monks whom they worshiped. It makes no mention of their internal dilemmas. So the next section of the main poem is very short, actually. So it says, now I hold this record and am able to visit it. Dogen's teaching is beyond compare with any other, yet no one investigates whether it's a jewel or stone. His writings have been covered with dust for 500 years because people do not have an eye for penetrating the Dharma. Everyone has been the same. Who could uphold Dogen's teachings for others? I yearn for Dogen's ancient way. Thinking of present day people, I feel pain deep in my heart. Throughout the night, by the lamp, light of the lamp, my tears have not ceased, completely soaking the record of the ancient Buddha, Ehe. And Roshi comments, after many years of his life as a hermit mendicant monk, Ryokan again reads a certain text by Dogen. And I think it's the extended record of Dogen. He says he is able to visit it, which Okumura says is the word able to visit it is a translation of this other word, this Japanese word, santoku. And san means to visit or attend, but it's the same san as in dokusan, which is face to face. So he feels that Ryokan is meeting with Dogen face to face. He understands that Dogen's insight is very different and beyond. He, Ryokan, understands that Dogen's insight is very different and beyond comparison with other Zen masters. He becomes sad that Dogen's writings have not been intimately studied for 500 years. Covered with dust, they lay stored in the treasuries of prestigious temples because later Soto Zen monks have no eye to discern the difference between jewel and stone. All the people in the stream of Dogen's lineage are the same. I'm sure Ryokan knows there were some eminent scholar monks who wrote commentaries on the Shobo Genzo and argued amongst themselves about points of Dogen's teaching. Their work offers no nutrition for people who sincerely seek the Dharma and in their actual lives. I mean, who cares about arguing points? Thinking of these things, Ryokan weeps all night and dampens Dogen's book with his tears. And so then the last passage. Next day, an old man from the neighborhood visits my grass hut and asks me why the book is wet. And although I try to say something, struggling in my mind, I cannot explain to him. Despite my efforts, I cannot explain. I lower my head and pause, then say the only one thing. Last night, the rain came in and drenched my book container. So in this final section, Ryokan writes, he had a visitor, and when he asked, why is the book wet? Ryokan tries to explain, but how is he going to explain? You know, I'm so sad because no one cares about Dogen anymore. For 500 years, his books have been covered with dust. But he can't express his, you know, this is just this visitor from next, he can't express what he really feels. So he just says, during the night, the rain came in and drenched my book container. So it's easy to see that Ryokan was transformed while he studied Dogen, and he aspired to practice more, but at the same time, he felt despair concerning the condition of Buddhist institutional, monasteries and the system that put Dogen on a pedestal. Dogen on a pedestal and his own Shobo Genzo away in the treasury simply to be worshiped, you know, not to be read and studied and practiced by. Eminent scholar monks merely argued with each other regarding fine points of Dogen's teachings. Even if Ryokan wished to be a reformer of the Soto Zen monastic system, it was not possible, both because of the external situation, the government, and because of his personality. He's just not able to do those kind of things. So recognizing these grounds, he needed to create his own way of life. Ryokan probably could not express to the village people either what is happening in the depths of his mind. And so he had to play this role of a funny, innocent, secluded mendicant monk who kind of played with the children. And by continually doing so for many years, he found that many people, not only rich people and well-educated, but also common farmers, merchants, fishermen, men and women, young and old, even prostitutes and children, were now his Sangha members. I mean, that's kind of amazing. Ryokan became, no one really understood who he was, but they loved him. They loved him anyway. And finally, Okamura concludes, Ryokan was like a jewel with many facets. When it is illuminated, we see many different colors reflected in them. This is the reason I was attracted by his poems and his way of life when I was going through the process of searching to find my own creative way of life without imitating Dogen. Really, Dogen, Sawaki Roshi, or Uchiyama Roshi, without imitating any of my teachers. When I began to study Dogen and practice Zazen, Dogen Zenji seemed to be on the top of the high mountain, and I wanted to walk toward that mountain. As I walked, the closer I got to the mountain, the higher and steeper the mountain appeared. But I felt that Ryokan was walking on the same ground as I was. Ryokan taught me, this is Okamura, that I needn't imitate Dogen or anyone else. So take a tip. Okamura learned from Ryokan that he need not imitate Dogen or anyone else. It's very important. We need to learn from Dogen, and right now we're learning from both Dogen and Ryokan, whom actually Okamura Roshi really felt like they were the same. That's why he was very inspired by Ryokan and has given many, many teachings on Ryokan. He just felt Ryokan and Dogen are the same. So here are some of the most important points from today's talk. First, when we see things from the just sitting of Zazen, we begin to see genuine reality. Dropping off body and mind is itself genuine reality. That's probably the most important point, that dropping off body and mind is itself genuine reality. And that is what happens in Zazen. So when we do Zazen, we enter the arena of genuine reality. The second point, Ryokan thought that Dogen's teaching based on dropping off body and mind came directly from Shakyamuni. Third, Ryokan was inspired and asked his teacher to allow him to read the text by himself. And at the time, at this time, the Shobo Genzo was not yet published in a woodblock version. So Ryokan had to ask for special permission from the abbot to read a rare and precious hand-copied manuscript. He went to this much trouble. And that's a lesson to us. It's kind of handed to us on a silver platter, but Ryokan had to go to a lot of trouble to study the Shobo Genzo. Fourth, in this poem, Ryokan says that wherever he went, he met and respectfully practiced Shobogen, the true Dharma eye. And Okumura Roshi thinks that Ryokan means that wherever he went, he practiced the essential spirit of Dogen, studying the self and dropping off body and mind. Those two things are the essential spirit of Dogen. Fifth, however, there may be a difference between Chinese lazy Zen monks and Ryokan. For Ryokan could not be completely lazy. He is not 100% comfortable being a lazy Zen monk. And Okumura Roshi thinks this is an attractive quality, that it makes him more complex and that his feelings are being included in who he is and how he thinks. And here are some points for reflection during the week. First, Ryokan doesn't care for social climbing, but leaves everything to, quote, heaven's truth. And heaven's truth means reality as it is, before being processed by human thinking. What does reality as it is, before being processed by human thinking, mean to you? The second point for reflection during the week. By studying Shobo Genzo, Ryokan says that he experienced the pivotal point for transforming himself. Until then, he probably thought Ryokan studied and practiced the Dharma using his own power and effort to see the true reality of all beings. But now he found that all beings came to him and allowed him to practice. Can you explain the difference between these two points of view in your actual life? What is the difference for you? What is the difference? The third point for reflection. When I'm hungry, I eat rice. When I'm tired, I sleep. Foolish people laugh at me, but wise people know what I mean. What does this now somewhat hackneyed Zen cliche really mean? What does it really mean? When I'm hungry, I eat rice. When I'm tired, I sleep. What does it mean? And the fourth one for reflection during the week. I think Ryokan found he could not live like Dogen because internally his impractical personality could not work with others within an organization. And good that he knew that. And externally, because of the situation of the Soto school and its temples, all being controlled by the government. He had to create his own lifestyle and practice as a bodhisattva, inspired by Dogen's teaching, but without imitating Dogen's style as it was practiced at Soto Zen monasteries of the time. Hearing this, I myself feel enormous freedom in creatively structuring my own personal Zen practice according to who I know I am. I wonder how you feel. So if you're modeling yourself now after Ryokan, who modeled himself after Dogen for a while and then stopped, what kind of practice will you develop for yourself? And maybe you will use Ryokan to some extent in designing your own personal practice. And this has directly to do with your personal vow, which is in another 2 weeks, you're supposed to have completed your own personal vow. So, and then the final point for reflection during the week, the fifth one, Ryokan's lifestyle after returning to Echigo, his hometown, is a typical example of Zen laziness. But what is that? How does it show up in your life? What is Zen laziness and how does it show up in your life? That's the point for reflection. And I'm sorry that there won't be an opportunity for questions today. And so I want to thank you anyway for being here, that is listening later to the recording. And I also want to thank my team, Brendan and Brian and Sahar, for all of the work, so much work they do behind the scenes to make these talks possible. See you next week. Bye-bye.